You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Welcome to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. My name is Noah Oldham, and I'm here with Vance Pittman. Hey, Vance, how are you today?
Noah, I'm great, man, and I'm really excited about this episode of the podcast because of what we're going to be talking about and talking about small groups. And we got an incredible guest to be able to do it because small groups were so much a part of the journey of what we did in Las Vegas that I'm really excited to get to hear from Spence today. And so I'll let you tell us who's on the podcast, Noah.
Yeah, so one of these big systems or ministries that every new church is thinking about is small groups. They take on all kinds of shapes, all kinds of sizes. How do you use them? Where do you use them? Who's in them? Well, with us today, we have none other than Spence Shelton. Spence is the lead pastor of Mercy Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. He has published articles and small group studies. He is often training, consulting churches in discipleship methods and models. He co-authored a number of books and studies, The People of God with Trevor Joy, Jesus the King, Small Group Study with Tim Keller, and The Meaning of Marriage, Small Group Study with Tim and Kathy Keller. Spence and his wife, Courtney, they have four kids, and so their home looks like a small group. And so, Spence, welcome to the podcast.
Man, that's good, man. Yeah, thank you guys so much. I'm honored and excited to have this conversation.
We're pumped to have you on. And hey, just for all those that are listening, new churches, you introduced him as the lead pastor of Mercy Church there in Charlotte, which he is. But for all of our listeners with new churches, so many of our people that are listening are church planters. Spence, you also planted the church there that you're now pastoring. Give us a quick snapshot of that journey, you being sent out and planting the church.
Oh, man, a snapshot? Anybody who's planted a church? No, that's a long story, man. But
that's right.
What I'll say is I was a pastor on staff at a church called the Summit Church for about 10 years. And those guys were great, including the lead pastor, J.D. Greer, still a good and dear friend of mine. Man, they saw in me the giftings of pastoring and preaching and teaching. And I went through the assessment about, you know, potentially either planting a church or leading a church. And it came back, like many of the guys probably listening to your podcast, that I wasn't the right fit to go and revitalize because, you know, I had some impatience in me that, you know, it would have been better to just have a blank slate. Sure. And so I took the vision the Lord had put on my heart, looked at a few different cities. Charlotte was the one that stood out both to our team there at the Summit and to myself and my wife. So in 2015, we moved down. We took 30 people from the Summit with us. We had 30 people in Charlotte, and that 60 formed our launch team. And we launched September 13, 2015. So we're coming up on 8 years. Man, the Lord has been so good and kind. Not that he wouldn't be anyways, but man, what a cool journey it's been for us here in Charlotte.
All right, well, let me say two things about it before you ask him a question. Number one, I don't think it's fair that you got to be a small groups pastor and then got sent out to plant a church, because that's like cheating. Like you had all the nuts and bolts already in you when you went to plant. And I say that having planted myself and knowing so many guys that go out to plant, so many people that go out to plant, they start wrong, and they start with this gathering of people and then try to retrofit groups into it. And if you start by making disciples, let groups form, and then the church is born out of that, it's just such a different paradigm. So it's not fair that you got to start that way. And then secondly, you mentioned your sending church and Pastor J.D. Greer. J.D. is one of my best friends. I preached for him earlier this year, and you told me you had him preach for you earlier this year, and you invited him on Mother's Day. And so I just want to say publicly to all that are listening, now the new guest speaker for Mother's Day is J.D. Greer. He is the guy to bring in for Mother's Day. I don't know anybody who speaks with more authority on Mother's Day than J.D. Greer. So I love that, and I think it's awesome.
Oh, man, that's too much. Man, just broaching that subject, like you said, Spence, you served as a groups pastor for 10 years, discipleship in groups there at the Summit. And then you planted a church. So tell us, what role should small groups play in the life of a new church?
Oh my goodness, man. Well, yeah, to go to our a little bit of our story is that we were a bunch of groups before we were ever a gathering, a worship gathering on Sunday. And that was with an intent to launch the gathering pretty quick. We didn't have an intent to wait a couple of years. Context-wise, we felt like we could begin a worship gathering, and that would be a good missional move for us because you have a lot of people that would come through the doors to hear the gospel on a weekend. But we still wanted to start from a place of discipleship. So the first thing that we did in our launch team phase was identify who could be leaders, who could be disciple makers, leaders for us, who could help shape. Really, it's going to be the trajectory of our church, because let's just say we did open up and had a lot of people show up. Well, we got to do something with them.
Yeah.
We got to disciple them. Otherwise, I'm not sure what are we doing. You know what I mean? I mean, the audience thing is a fun, energetic. I mean, there's nothing like launch day high. If you're a church planter, that first day, nothing like it. But man, we're called to make disciples. So I wanted to have some leaders in place and groups in place so that we could disciple those the Lord brought us. So that was up and running before we ever even opened up the church.
Vance, you said something to me earlier just about the difference between how we can look at small groups in a church. You used a couple of different phrases. Why don't you share those with the audience to understand that?
Yeah, it's a massive mistake. It was born out of a massive mistake we made, Spence, in the church plant in Vegas. We went out and our philosophy was different. A lot of church planting in North America starts with a gathering. You plant a church, then you try to make disciples out of the people who are coming so you can then engage the city with the gospel. When you look biblically at a missiology, Pauline missiology and church planting started by engaging a city with the gospel, then seeing disciples made, and then churches were born out of that. So that's kind of how we started. And before we launched, we had multiple groups meeting, but then we did launch, and the launch kind of took off, and very quickly, in 3 years, we ran over 1,000 people on our weekend gathering, and the weekend gathering became the tail that wagged the dog for several years. And I looked up at about 2009, and somebody brought me a number, and here was the number. I'll never forget it, 7,134. You say, what was that? It was the number of people that had visited our church over 3.5 year period of time. And over that same 3.5 year period of time, we'd only grown by about 400 or 500 people. So 7,000 people coming through the doors. And here's what I realized at that point, we only had about, we're running at that time, probably 2,000 people, and about 300 were in groups. We were a church with small groups, but we were not a church of groups. And I had to get up and repent in front of our church and just bring us back to a disciple-making mentality. And from that point forward, from 2010 to today, I think today, Hope's probably got about 4,000 people on a weekend, but they've got about 80% of those, 75 to 80% of those now in groups, because it's a church of groups. Everything we do, the mission we do through groups, we do announcements through groups. Like if you don't, if you're not in groups, you don't know what's going on in the life of a church. So that's why I'm so excited, Spence, about some of the stuff that you're going to talk to us about groups and how you implement that in the life of a church plant.
I love it, man. I love that. You know, for us, the target on the wall is right around 80% for people that are there on the weekend being engaged in groups. And the idea behind that, while personally, I would love it to be more like 120%, because that would mean we got more people that are, you know, out there engaging the community that aren't there yet. We have seen a growth on our weekend pretty steady year over year. And so I'm trying to not, I guess, have my groups guy in the fetal position all the time, right? So we'll shoot for like 80%. And the idea behind that is, you know, people, if they're coming in and you've been here for a minute, it should have been, there's a several moments where you should have been asked repeatedly to get into a community group. That's what we call them, community group, but get in there because that's where the life of the church happens. And enough of those conversations have happened where it starts to be a little awkward if you're not in one. You know, we say, let's make a couple of questions. You know, tell us your name and are you in a community group? That's like even at the first time guest tent, where of course they're not yet, but we're already having that conversation, you know, from right out of the gate, trying to encourage people to make that move. We'll talk a little bit in here, I think, about what keeps people from getting there and why you got to have a sort of a map instead of a menu in discipleship to help people get to that space of group. But man, 80% is kind of our target on the wall because of like everything you just said, Vance, how valuable that is to discipling people and not just gathering them?
Well, we said at Hope often that life change happens in community. Like
that's right.
it that's where the discipleship happens. But I also understand missiologically that one of the mission principles is contextualization. And in North America, this may not be true in other parts of the world. You may have 120% in groups more than in gathering, but in North America, there's still something about the Sunday gathering that is a part of the contextualized missiological approach.
That's right.
A lot of people will come through that front door first, once the gathering is up and going, and then you have to assimilate them. So I appreciate the distinction that you made there to take the pressure off.
Yeah, one of the big questions I hear from planters all the time. So I served as the Send to City missionary in St. Louis for about a decade, helping guys get off the ground. One of the questions they're asking is, like, what is the methodology of small groups? What is it for? Is it for discipleship, as you said a couple times, Spence? Is it for community, which you call yours community groups? Is it for mission and missional communities? And then what's the magic number? What's the size? Spence, I'd love, as this guy who's been in this for so long, flesh some of that out for us. What should church planters be thinking about?
All right, man. So this is great. I love the question because it's the right question to ask a church planter. The first one is, man, what is your mission as a church? And why in the world do you want to do community groups or whatever version? Again, I use my word. Why do you want to do a group? Because I think guys go to conferences, hear a podcast like this and some others, and assume they have to run the play instead of thinking about the ideas behind the play. And so what I try really hard to do is encourage guys, how are groups going to accomplish your mission? What role do they serve? Because if you don't answer that, what's going to happen is groups are going to become a junk drawer that you just hope everything that you do happens in the group. And you just kind of trust a group leader to basically be you, and you outsource everything other than preaching to a lay leader in your church. And a lot of times that causes them to burn out. Listen, clarity creates confidence. So you give leader clarity on what their expectations are, what's a win for them. And then that's going to give them confidence to carry that out. And that whatever their role is in the discipleship map of making a disciple at your church. So for us, we even call it community group because we believe a group is a greenhouse where those really intense life-on-life discipleship relationships are going to form. I actually don't think every single key discipleship conversation is going to happen in the living room. I think it's going to create the living room's the greenhouse, or the office is the greenhouse, or the coffee shop is the greenhouse where the relationships form. And then you get one-on-one, one-on-two with some of those people. And that's where you really iron sharpen iron. Things start to get real with one another. So what I encourage folks is that, look, if you're doing a co-ed community group in someone's home, every pastors have got to know their leaders. They got to know their leaders' capacity. For example, even life stage matters. You got a family in their early 30s with a bunch of young kids. They probably need to keep that community group somewhat small because their capacity to shepherd is pretty small right now. And that's okay. They're shepherding their primary discipleship environment. That's their home. So it's okay. They may not be more than four other couples or just eight other people total that they can really shepherd. You got somebody who's an empty nester and has had 15, 20 years of walking with Jesus or more, and they got time, man, that number can grow because they've got the time and space to do it. It's less about you try and put a target on the wall and say every single person should aim for that. Well, again, you're probably trying to put something in place that's a little too broad instead of actually looking at your leaders and saying, what can they do? So we tend to say somewhere around 7 to 15 is our target. That's a big target, right? That's not a single number, but that's because you got to know your people and then shepherd them accordingly. And what might be, you know, somebody might be lollygagging if they're in their 50s and their kids are out of the home. That needs to be up around 15. Also, I take into account, is this a single gender group or is this a co-ed group? Because if you've got a guys group, man, 5 might be all you need, right? Because you got to deal, you as the leader got 5 guys you got to shepherd and care for and build a map of what's going to happen over the next year for them. But if you've got a lot of times a couple that's in your church and they're leading, it often happens that the husband will lead and the wife will lead, and you're able to have, and you lead as a couple as well, of course, and you're able to have more like 12 people in a group, and that can work really well. So it just depends on who's in the group in terms of the target on the wall. And then I just reemphasize one more time, pastor, you got to know, what do you want out of your group leaders, and give them clarity. For us, again, the greenhouse. So relationships are king, and we have an equipping arm of our church that's a little more like the old school Sunday school. We bring people in and gifted teachers teach. So I don't need somebody to have the spiritual gift of teaching to lead a community group, because I've been real clear on what it is we're after, right? I do need them to be gifted if they're going to teach in our equipping settings. I want both, but I'm clear on what the win is. That's the biggest thing I can say.
So Spence, you have been unpacking this, and I've listened very carefully, and probably in at least every other sentence, if not every sentence, you've used the word lead or leader. Mm-hmm. So what I'm getting from you is that leadership in this arena of groups is massively important. Who's leading the groups, how they're leading the groups, their understanding of what the groups are supposed to accomplish. So answer two questions for us. What are you looking for in a small group leader? And then how do you then prepare or equip them to lead those groups?
Oh, man. What am I looking for, and how do we equip them? Oh, man, it starts even with whoever's leading the whole ministry. But let's just say what we're looking for in the community group leader themselves. First is the old saying, faithful, available, teachable, right? Are they faithful? Not only to the church, but that's important, man. Are they faithful to whatever assignment they've already been on? Which means they've already been on an assignment to some degree or another, right? Faithful. Also faithful to the Lord. So I'm putting character in there really high. I want to see character before I want to see skill. In fact, you're not going to hear me talk about skill. You hear me talk about faithfulness to the Lord and character. Man, what kind of man or woman are we looking at? So we're looking in their home, everything else available, it's just really hard. You know, this happens. 20% of your church does 80% of the work, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, man, who actually has some margin and is available? And if we're going to say, take a step, we want to take them out of something in order to step into this. That's good shepherding of your people. And teachable, when they are corrected, when they are trained, do they receive it? Or are they there to run their own play and your church is just the mechanism by which they can do their own thing? Or are they ready to be instructed and trained and everything else? Faithful, available, teachable, because I have seen time and again, I don't care what their personality type is, and I don't care what industry they work in, or I say even industry. Man, some of our best leaders are our college leaders, right? That are still in school because they're faithful, they're available, and they're teachable. And our college leaders are reproducing at an incredible rate right now. And to call them leaders, if we were to put something, sometimes we can put such high bars on people that truthfully, we probably wouldn't even be able to reach if we were assessed by the very things that we put in place. So, man,
before you talk about how to equip them, then do you have any tools or resources that you use to evaluate? You talked about that faithful, available, teachable, and the character. Do you guys use any tools? Do you have any things that metrics that you use to evaluate or assess those leaders in those areas?
Yeah, we're using, when we talk about tools for assessing a leader, I would probably flag them more or identify them, categorize them more as benchmarks. So we're looking at what's their participation, what's their track record. That's a short way to say it. What's their track record at our church? And there are things that you just go, man, they check the boxes in these areas. And then we're hopefully all of our best leaders are ones that are coming out of community groups themselves, right? So then we're saying to current leaders, all right, faithful, available, teachable, tell me how these folks stack up. And we're having conversations. One of the things I tell church planners all the time is do what doesn't scale. And this is what I mean by this. The things that don't scale are my metrics and evaluations and everything being, I'm sitting down with current community group leaders and having one-on-one conversations about the people in their group. and saying, hey, is this person faithful, able, teachable? Now, eventually, like I say, that doesn't scale and you got to start formalizing things. But especially here, as we're talking about new churches and church plants, man, the thing that doesn't scale is a whole lot of time with you as the pastor, planter, with your leaders, talking through the people in their group, and just being a shepherd, knowing the people well. Eventually, you're going to have to build out some of these things and systematize some things. But the more you can be present with them and have those conversations, I think the better. So we even still now, 8 years in, rely heavily on 8 years in and a couple of campuses, a little bit bigger operation than the days that we planted. We still rely heavily on being right there, close as we can, our pastors and elders. Elders coach community group leaders. We want to be right in there and have it simple. Hey, here's who they are. Here's what we're looking for. Who in your group might it be time for them to go out? And we say plant a group. We don't split them. Even though multiplication is actually our thing, we don't multiply them. We plant, because healthy churches plant churches. So healthy groups plant groups. Gets the DNA further down in.
That's really good. Hey, one of the magic questions that so many group leaders are trying to think through is what you just already broached really small there. When do you multiply? When do you plant a group? What size of a group is too big? And what are the signs of health to say it's time?
All right. So when do you plant a group, man? First of all, to those that are let's go big picture. You plant a group when you want to reach people and make disciples. That's when you plant a group. All right. So let's say you have 100% of your people in a community group. Y'all need to plant groups to go reach lost people. That's what I'm saying. So it's time to go plant a group in your neighborhood and go reach some lost people. Because if you stay at 100%, what are we doing? We want to keep reaching people with the gospel. So whenever you want to make disciples, whenever you want to reach lost people, that's when you plant a community group. All right. Now, with that, I think that's a big important thing to remember. We don't just do it because you hit a certain size in a group. All right. I think that's actually third or fourth. I think first is we want to reach lost people. We want to make disciples. Second is we've got somebody in our group ready to lead. They're ready to lead. So let's train them up. We identify, man, that person could be a leader, faithful, available, teachable. I see their character. Man, I see them. We need to send that. When you plant a group is when you have somebody that the Lord is raising up and you fan that flame and then you plant them out. Now, formally speaking, we do it twice a year in terms of however we can formalize, again, from the church side of things. We do it twice a year, which fits the church calendar when that momentum happens, January and September. That's when we formally say, hey, guys, we're going to plant some new groups. We got some group planters. That's how we celebrate them. Get all excited. Just like we celebrate church planters, we celebrate our group planters as well.
Man, that's really good. That's helpful. Keeping the eye on the prize at the end of all of this is making disciples, seeing people come to faith in Jesus, keeping that mission in front of folks.
Yeah, I love what he just said, Noah, because he's talking about multiplying disciples and churches. And that's really, you know, what we have to be about. We have to think multiplication at every level, and that's multiplication, that's not right. Just of churches, but it's multiplication of disciples, which means multiplication of groups. And I also love, Spence, as you just pointed out, it's not driven just by a systematized approach. It's driven by the activity of God and raising up disciples and leaders and watching for God's activity in this process of multiplication. Because if we're not careful, we can make this a math equation, and that's not what this is. This is the activity of God in making disciples and multiplying churches for the expansion of his kingdom. And I thought that was a really, really wise approach.
Yeah, man. That's what we're after. I really appreciate you super affirming here. You say that, man. I haven't done it for a bit. That's what we're after, making disciples, man. And the Lord is the one that gives the growth. We're just out here sowing seed and watering, man. And as we see the Lord growing, you know, we go harvest.
Man, so good. Spence, it's been so good to have you on the podcast today. We're going to have you back for a future episode, and I can't wait to dig a little deeper into the subject of church planting and small groups.
Thanks so much, guys.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.